We're talking about the interaction of the brain and the the brain and the soul, really. And more specifically, how do you retrain, right, a depraved, fallen, unregenerate brain, right? How do you retrain a depraved brain to integrate with a redeemed soul? How does that work? And a lot of us have had such damage in the past. Where did that damage happen? You want to be quick to say the damage happened in your soul. Yeah, I got it. All right. But where are a lot of those, wounds still manifested? They're in your brain. Does your brain remember a lot of things that, quote, you don't remember? I know it sounds weird to say it that way, but isn't that true? When you're trying to recall an event, if you're trying to recall a memory, trying to recall a name, where are you looking? Yeah, you're looking in your brain, right? But you're not identified with your brain. You're not identical to your brain. You're the thing that has a brain. Put it this way. This is real simple, okay? Can you see without your eyes? Answer is yes, because every one of you can see things when you dream, right? So you see using your eyes, but you don't have to have eyes to see, or else God couldn't see. God doesn't have eyes. Well, I mean, other than the incarnation in Jesus. You with me? Can angels see? They don't have eyeballs. So look, these are capacities of a soul, and most souls are embodied that we're familiar with, but there are some disembodied souls, and we call them angels, and the fallen ones are demons. Get it? This is all biblical worldview stuff. So when it comes to how God has redeemed us and what he wants for us, a lot of it is about the redemption of the brain as well as, quote, the soul. And in fact, character formation, spiritual formation, trauma recovery, addiction recovery, a lot of that work occurs in helping the brain get retrained and reprogrammed to deal with those traumas and more skilled at dealing with ongoing stress. And in fact, to get it even more specific, if you don't have a strong joy center, if this is not rooted in joy, you cannot deal effectively with other relationships and things like that. Now, if all that I just said interests you, you're already hooked into an area called neurotheology, which is the expertise of Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and Christian counselor since 1977. The website, joy2thrive.com. A couple events coming up in June, and you can get more information at joy2thrive.com. I asked for people to weigh in on this, if it makes sense, if it works, if you're familiar with the life model of Dr. Wilder and his team. Join us, 888-995-5552. I want to go to Vince up in Northern California in Antioch. Welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. Vince, first thing, can anything good come from Antioch?
You know, I got to tell you, Francis Chan asked me the same question.
Great.
No, I just called. I have to say thank you, Dr. Wilder. Thank you, Frank, for having him on. We've been studying the life model and actually applying these exercises. Now, we finished restarting earlier in the year. We jumped right into belonging because it came out, and we're forming came out. All these modules come out, but I got to tell you, I didn't know that new neural pathways can be laid in your brain if you do these exercises. Retraining our brain for joy, we learned in restarting, it's kind of difficult because when you have traumas, type A and B, you think, yeah, no, that's okay. It's just how I am. You know, you go through life with these emotions that you don't know how to regulate. And these exercises teaches you how to do that and how to regulate your emotions and return to joy through appreciation, really, bottom line. But the manual process is part of our learning. And with, you know, Dr. Carl Lehman just showing us how to bring Jesus in those areas, Frank, where he can only heal that area, not any other deliverance or what you know. Long story short, sorry, guys, I get excited.
No, Vince, this is great. Look, Vince, the bottom line is this stuff works, and you're doing it in your church.
Well, I'm doing it as a small group for 7 different churches.
Wow, awesome. I love it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wilder. I appreciate you. Can't wait to see you in June.
All right. Looking forward to have you there at our conference, too.
Yeah.
All right, Vince, thank you. All right, so before we go back to phone calls, Jim, he threw a lot of stuff out there. Go slow because a lot of people are hearing this for the first time. Let's go back to this joy thing because this seems to be really key.
Yeah, joy is really key because joy means we're glad to be together. I mean, basically, if you're not glad to be with God, he's not going to teach you anything that is going to transform your character. So to change who we are, we have to trust somebody to get inside our heads, to share our thoughts with us, to be there and get such a good picture with us that we can say they totally get it. And God totally gets it. And when he totally gets it, then he says, oh, and there's more to this picture than you saw before. Now you're ready to have a look, you see. And that, again, is what he's discussing there is these exercises. We've developed programs of exercises that help people to go through this, you know, one step at a time so they can learn how do you go about building better neural pathways of joy within my brain, with other relationships with God and with people. And again, for the purpose of talking about these exercises, they're the things that basically came out of the work of Dallas and Jane Willard in Shepherd's House in Our Lives. Jane came in saying, you know, here's things we need to do with people to help them to experience God. She began to help introduce into people's mind that they should develop a relationship with God and come to understand where he was at the time that things went wrong. You see, in traumas, you are those moments of no joy, when there's nobody glad to be with you, otherwise it wouldn't be a trauma.
Well, and people need to know, they may be familiar since they listen to my show, but Dallas Willard, huge fan, right? But Jane is almost equally as impactful in the realm of psychology. In fact, she was at the Shepherd's House for years, helped work with you and train you in a lot of this, and she saw thousands and thousands of women, most of them dealing with childhood sexual abuse. And so when she says, look, we need to help them experience God, these are wounded little girls who had been molested and raped, and trying to reconnect them with God. And she found these skills that she sort of developed and gleaned and brought together, they've actually worked over the years.
And that's what inspired me. Remember the woman who was, I said, Jesus help, because she had that childhood trauma. And I went looking for what happened there. Actually, it was Jane who came down the hall one day, and I said, we are asking Jesus to come help us, and he's showing up down at the other end of the hall. And I said, this is what I've been looking for all my, life ever since I was at that camp, trying to figure out what happens when God shows up. And when God is there, he's glad to be with you. He's glad to share your problems. He's glad to share your sorrows. He's glad to see what's happened to you. He's even glad to share the things that you've misunderstood and start with you right there. And we basically built on that so that when the caller was talking about the Emmanuel process.
Yes.
Carl Lehman from Chicago, getting back to Chicago again, has been helping us develop that. He's a psychiatrist from Chicago. And he's been looking at, together with us, how does the brain actually sequence its recovery so that we will pray and allow Jesus to step us through the things it needs to get our brain running right again.
Mm.
So starting way deep in your brain with the trauma and then working its way all the way out to the outer edges one step at a time, letting Jesus be with you all the time.
Well, and one of the obvious things, Emmanuel, God with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so God with us in recovery, God with us in our daily lives. I mean, the whole Emmanuel process, how to be aware of God's presence 24/7 constantly.
Yeah, and there's no other way to describe trauma than a time when you feel like God forsake you. God wasn't there. God wasn't around. Nobody was around, or you wouldn't have really been traumatized that way. So to find where God was at a time when you think he must not be there and he must not care, that's really the sort of the center of what we have to do to change our brain. Interestingly enough, when the trauma resolves, you can see the shift of the brain activity. It goes from the back of the brain way down there in the fear centers, and all of a sudden it goes right up through your identity center, and all of a sudden your brain is back to running.
Wait, you're saying that like you watched it on a monitor or something.
Yeah, brain scans. You can watch this on a monitor.
No way.
Yeah. Brain trauma resolves like
I'm just amazing. Whoop. So,
like the lights come on.
So, no, really. Please correct me because I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression here, but it sounds like what you're saying is you take, quote, an effective counseling session where the switches go on for someone and God, they realize God was there. God is with me in dealing with this, and I'm getting my way out of where I was in that dark place and now into the light and beginning to experience joy. You can watch that on a monitor?
Sure. Yeah. You watch the brainwaves
oh my
change.
Gosh.
It's all there.
All right. Listen, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to take phone calls. Those of you that, are listening to this, does this make sense? how about in your life, those of you that have gone through trauma, or how about children that are developmentally challenged, right? Or brain injuries, right? And we've got to ask questions on this. How does that work? All right, we're going to come back. Take your calls. 888-995-5552. My guest is Dr. Jim Wilder from the Shepherd's House. He's written a book based on this, entitled The Life Model, Living from the Heart Jesus Gave You. A couple events coming up in June as well that you're invited to. You can get more information at joy2thrive.com. That's joy2thrive.com. I'll be emceeing an event for Dr. Dallas Willard and his wife Jane, and that will be out in La Cañada. Again, more information at joy2thrive.com. Quick break, your call's next. Bottom line, this stuff works, and it makes sense, and it heals. And those that have experienced trauma and have gone through, a lot of bad stuff, other than just, depression, the whole thing. When you understand that the brain has experienced and remembers all kinds of stuff, it has fallen and it's wounded and the enemies at work on it and et cetera, all the stuff that's happened, you have the redeemed soul, but you still have a fallen, depraved brain that has occurred as well. I mean, I'm with you. I get the idea of, I'm in Christ, I'm a brand new creation. Well, wait a minute. There's all kinds of things that are still there about you in the past that now you are going to be working with God to address and heal. One of the great insights that have grown out of the ministry of the Shepherd's House, in large part due to the ministry of Jane Willard, Dallas's wife, where for a year she was seeing thousands of patients, most of them women who had experienced childhood sexual trauma, right? One of the insights she had was, look, we need to get people to experience God and ask, where was God when this trauma occurred, and help them realize, no, God was there. Because, of course, one of the definitions of trauma is that a horrible thing has happened and you don't feel, you're not aware of God's presence. Well, the old model of counseling was, okay, let's go back to the horrible event and now bring God to it. That's not effective. What actually is effective is, let's get you with God experiencing joy, and together, this is the manual process, together let's go back now and revisit this event. Is that fair enough to say, Doc?
Yeah, I think it is. That the relationship with God is really a big part of the healing thing, but it's an exercise that we have to do to build our joy with God, just like we have to build our joy with other people. And I probably need to say this so that I keep a good relationship with Jane Willard. She supervised a lot of people. She didn't see all of the, thousands of people. You made that comment, and she'll say, oh, well, now technically I didn't see thousands of people. She supervised a team. We had about 18 counselors that were, dealing with these issues, and she was one of the staff. So back to this, the question again of building joy with God. This is the sort of the essence of experiencing Him. He really does have a smile and a desire to be with you. And He's not afraid to be with you even when it hurts a whole lot. That's really what character comes from. So we're talking about a conference or discussing what's going on with character. Character is really being able to stay on track with other people, stay connected with them, even if it hurts a whole lot. And if we're able to do that, then, we're expressing the kind of love that God wants us to have for our neighbors.
Awesome, awesome. 888-995-5552. A lot of you have questions about this. I've got a million at least. Let's go to Mike in Westlake. Mike, you're on the Frank Pastore Show with Dr. Jim Wilder. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to see what I could do to influence my ex-girlfriend. She's suffering from depression, what I would call depression, but she doesn't even want to get diagnosed. But I think it stems from her being abused when she was very, very young.
All right, so your question, Mike, is, if I could paraphrase, how can you help someone that may have been traumatized and they don't even know it? So, Dr. Wilder?
Well, that's helping somebody else really requires you to be able to build joy with them yourself. And the answer is not to try to get into the trauma, which has been what we've traditionally tried to do in psychotherapy. If you can just go and remember and just get into all of the trauma, you'll have a better life. You actually are trying to solve the problem, how do I stay in relationship when I hurt this much? And the interesting thing about building joy is that most people won't do it simply because they aren't rested enough. So the real practical bit of advice is if you want somebody to build more joy, help them to quiet, rest, go to a quiet place, comfortable place, someplace where they, it's no wonder that the safe places are so popular. So if you can create a safe place in your heart where you can see this person, and this is again, going back to the Emmanuel process. If you say, God, would you show me how you see my girlfriend right now? Would you show me how you want me to treat her right now? How would I be your eyes and ears and smile and face to her in these moments, you see? That is when it transfers God's way of seeing and living into our brain and onto the people around us.
Now, I'm one of the first things, these things just roll off your tongue, Jim, so fast. I want to slow down for people to get all these wonderful little nuggets. I think every parent understands when there's a teachable moment with your child, you've got to be emotionally connected with them, and they've got to be receptive. You've analyzed that. And that receptivity, that openness, that willingness to enter into relationship, that vulnerability, all of that kind of stuff is really rooted in joy. How?
Well, joy grows out of a mutual mind state with other people. We're actually wired so that if we're working right, I can begin to feel what you're feeling just by watching your face and hearing your voice tone and these sort of things. So just listening to the last caller, you can hear a sort of distress in his voice.
Yes.
And you say, you know, here's the distress in his voice. He must care about his girlfriend. If you begin to understand that, you say, okay, we're going to enter this from a caring perspective. These are the kind of ways in which our mind begin to synchronize with others. And by spending those same times with God, our minds can begin to synchronize with his thoughts as well. And the interesting things about mutual mind state is you can't tell for sure if it's them or you.
Mm.
So is it my thoughts or God thoughts? I don't know. It's sort of our thoughts. Is it my feeling sad or my girlfriend feeling sad? I don't know. We are feeling sad. It's a mutual state. And under those mutual states, that is when we're able to direct other people to look at and see something else. If we don't enter into them, their state, we don't get anywhere. In fact, somewhere I read that we are supposed to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. Those two simple instructions, if they were followed by all Christians, would really radically transform the way our brains operate.
Now, Jim, I got to do a break here in a second, but what happens, and again, this is getting really autobiographical here. Gina was having, my wife, was having a really bad day someday last week. And I got home, get home about 8 o'clock right after the show. And I came in, and she's, I don't know, 90 feet away in the kitchen from the back door. And as soon as I walked in, I was aware, okay, something's not right. And I think every person in a relationship knows what I'm talking about. You can sense it. Mm-hmm. But see, again, you've analyzed this. What's going on?
Well, there's certainly many cues in your brain and in your body, but this is one of those interesting points where you wonder, I wonder if my spirit didn't pick up something about the whole situation as well. That there, you know, I just, there's an attunement to other people's spirit as well. So there, in this, you know, we expect certain reactions from people when they don't happen. Our mind goes, oh, you know, your joy light has gone out. Mm. I would expect that you would light up just to see Frank walk in the door.
Well, no, I remember one of the times I had you on, it was, well, when and you've researched all this, but it's like if you pick up a young child, you can calm them because their brain picks up a heartbeat or something like that. Quickly, slow that out.
Yeah, exactly. It's all nonverbal, but by watching somebody else's emotional reactions, we actually can match their heartbeat rate to ours, slowing down our heart by releasing serotonin, all these things that we don't know how we do them, but we actually learned them from our mothers in the first year of life if our mother had the brain skill. If she didn't have it, she couldn't pass it on to us. And so some of the people that are having the biggest struggles in life have not never learned from somebody who knew how to do it. How do they slow their heart rate down? How do they match somebody else's emotion? How do they know when somebody else has had enough and want to back off? All of these little things that we pick up are nonverbal cues from languages, faces, little twitches in the eye, all these little things that make a huge difference are the things we have to actually learn from someone that knows them. Those are some of the relational skills that we need to add if we are going to express God's life and love to the people around us the way he you know, loves us from his eternal perspective.
And if I remember right, there's something really key in the development of a child at month number 9.
Yes.
I remember that. That was mind-blowing.
I'm
going to blow through the break here just for a quick. Now, get this out. This is really good.
That's when the brain blooms. You got all these nerve endings in your brain just waiting to grow. And at month 9, they all come alive. They spread out like crazy, especially in your joy center. And whatever you use, your brain will keep. If you don't use it, your brain will come through later and trim it out and go, hey, we didn't need that. So it's like flowers. You know, my flowers on some of my trees right now are all over the place. And the ones that get pollinated, we'll keep those and we'll turn into fruit. The ones that didn't get pollinated just drop off. And
right.
That's basically what goes on in the 9th month. And to keep them, you have to smile. You have to do this joy back and forth and alternate that joy with quiet and rest. A baby will do that 8 hours a day if they get a chance to during that 9 months, grow a really strong brain.
And in fact, I remember you saying if you could, you would have every mom take month number 9 off and spend it constantly smiling, giggling, cuckooing, holding, resting their child.
Yeah, absolutely so. You know, there's a controversy going on right now about this picture of a woman breastfeeding
yes.
an older child, right? Because it's about attachment parenting. Well, leaving most of that aside because you're about to take a break, I'll say the biggest part of attachment parenting is not how you breastfeed, but how you smile with your child. That's when the bond grows the biggest, is during that 9th month.
And in the 9th month.
In the
right.
month. That's what joy is all about.
Some of the best conversations happen off the air, and I try to replicate them on the air. Dr. Jim Wilder and I were just talking, and the thought occurred to me as we're talking about the brain and the latest brain science and the Bible and this whole sphere of this whole discipline called neurotheology and how the brain develops and heals and this marvelous way God's done it and just this whole thing. And it dawned on me, okay, what about evil and like sociopaths? What are sociopaths really good at? I mean, if Dr. Wilder, what he said just a minute ago was, in the 9th month of development, an infant, their joy center blooms, much like a fruit tree coming into blossom, right? And the blossoms that get pollinated turn into fruit. Well, in the same way, if in the 9th month of development you get the right stuff, your joy account is filled up, and you're capable and able to deal with trauma later on in life far more successfully than those that do not receive it. All right, now that makes sense. When your child's crying and you pick up your child, did you know that the brain can pick up within 3 feet another heartbeat, and it quiets down? You don't even have to physically touch; it can you quiet down. We know this, right? You any parent knows this. So, I asked about a sociopath. What is a sociopath good at? And Doc, do your best to try to lay this out because you said it just so perfectly. But what is a sociopath really good at? And I'll just leave it there. What's a sociopath good at?
Yeah, they read those nonverbal cues and they know exactly what the message is that's going on. But while they're reading the cues, they suppress the genuine bond with the other person so that I can read everything about you. I can even mimic your joy. I can amp your joy up if I want to, make you happy, whichever way I want to go. But I'm not going to actually care about what's going on inside of you. I'm going to suppress that. Interestingly enough, one of the chemicals that suppresses that is nicotine. So you'll find that all the torturers around the world, when they're torturing other people, are smoking or using some kind of nicotine because it suppresses the sense of being connected to the other person. Also, you know, you want to smoke after sex if you don't want to be connected with somebody. Those are all little things. That,
what?
You know,
slow down. No, this is great. I never even thought of that. But yeah, like in all the movies, they're always smoking a cigarette. And
sure, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. And then if you don't want to be connected, just no way.
That's sort of that sociopathic thing. I can have all these feelings with you, but I don't actually have to care about it.
So nicotine cuts off the relational circuits?
Yeah. It suppresses that sense of being personally connected to what's going on around you.
Wow.
It's an artificial way of quieting your feeling personally about what's going on in the world around you. That's why people love it a lot.
All right. Go ahead.
So. We have this, you know, the problem that goes back even deeper is that you can actually get trained to do this sort of thing. One of the things that really Dallas Willard did that just totally ruined my life was...
ruined your life.
It ruined my life,
okay.
Yeah. Was he came in and he was talking to us as a staff about psychology. And he said, no, psychology is the care of the soul. And the most important thing about the care of the soul is you have to love them. Well, now, I had learned to be a good psychologist. I'd been trained in a variety of hospitals. And the one thing you're not supposed to do is get emotionally involved or care about the people you're dealing with.
Right.
You're supposed to act as though you have a relationship with them when you really don't. You're supposed to do the sociopath thing really well when it comes right down to it. I act as though I care, I'm involved with you, but I don't actually have any real deep feelings about you. I don't get connected with you and get involved with that. And, you know, it really illuminated to me what was in the book called The Nazi Doctors, The Medical Killing and Psychology of Genocide by Robert Lifton, because he went to study out how did the concentration camps happen. You see, the concentration camps were run by doctors. They found that if they used an SS officer to kill people, within one day of killing, they were no longer fit to work or fight or do anything else. It just ruined them, because they felt too deeply about the people they were killing. And so they actually started the figuring out how to kill people by killing off the psychiatric patients and getting the psychiatrists to do it. They found that the psychiatrists could actually kill people and not feel anything about it afterwards. They could look at you and smile and say, here, you know, let me help you along when I'm taking you into a gas chamber. And so I found, much to my horror, that my training as a therapist was actually in great ways preparing me to be the same kind of, I can look at you, I can act like I care, but inside I'm really not connected or really not caring about you.
Wow.
And that's where the care of the soul, the development of true joy, takes this very strange turn. Really changing somebody's identity and building character means you're willing to be connected with them at a very personal, deep kind of a level. Now, that was never so illustrated to me as when I met my friend Thomas. Thomas, actually, he's German. And not too long after I met him, he told me that his grandfather was actually the SS officer that had tracked down and jailed Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
So, oh, wow.
You've probably heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer if you've been around at all, because he's about the only Christian pastor that opposed Hitler in any way. And for his troubles, he got himself jailed and killed. Now, the guy that tracked him down was Thomas's father, a grandfather. And the interesting thing for that was that when Thomas's father was a young man, he came across the works of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and he was challenged and changed by them, especially the What About Life and Community. So he brought the book home, and his father threw him out, said, you know, that man was awful. If you're going to be his follower, you have to be out of here. And so Thomas's father then devoted his life to trying to undo the work of his SS officer father.
Wow.
Okay. And where he decided to do that was he went back to Poland, where his father had been involved in killing people. He went to South Africa, where his father had been involved in killing people, and began to try to help those particular people. But in specific, he began to invite into his home, and he developed a little sort of home community there, the children of SS officers whose mothers were Jewish.
Wow, now there's a conflict.
There's a real conflict, you see, because as it turns out, a number of the SS officers, known to the rest of the SS, were married to Jewish wives. And they were told, if you are not the most ruthless, the best SS officer possible, we're going to kill your wife.
Oh, my God.
So some of the greatest atrocities were caused by SS officers who are married to a Jewish woman. They're trying to protect their wife in some way. But at the same time, their children now become this terrible pariah, I suppose, in society. Because on the one hand, you don't want to associate with anybody who likes SS officers. And on the other hand, you know, how do you go about being Jewish in the context of that?
Right, right.
And besides, these families were highly traumatic places to grow up. So these are people who develop terrible conflicts inside, terrible lack of social skills, low joy. And this family basically developed a community for them. And I spent a while, a couple of weeks, living with them and trying to
explain. Whoa. You lived with this guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I want to learn how community happens, and I want to understand how people live. Remember, we started out talking about character.
Right.
Your audience may have joined us since then.
Yes. But this like kind an hour of, and a half ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but this kind of character, how do you go about caring about the people that your dad basically was wiping out. How do you go about restoring people who on both sides of their family can't fit into society? This is the kind of character that I'm interested in finding out about.
Well, and the relationship between the brain and the brain development and what deadens it. I mean, the sociopath thing that you said, they pick up on all the cues that, quote, a normal person does, but they don't make the attachment to the other person.
Right.
And you were on that path a counselor to where I can fake that I'm actually interested in my patients, but I need to be able to turn it off. And that was, quote, the counseling profession. And that creates a Nazi doctor.
Yeah.
That's why the SS officers couldn't kill people, but the psychiatrist could.
Exactly so, yeah. I can remember my supervisors actually screaming at me because I'd shown signs of caring for somebody that I was dealing with when I was working in one of the VA hospitals that I trained in. I was working with brain damage victims, by the way, in most of these hospitals. So again, all of these factors kind of tie together with each other. Well, Thomas decided he wanted to send me to the Sudan because Sudan had had 25 years of war.
Right.
And that was one of the areas that had been somewhat impacted by the Germans as well, the occupations. They went in and they ransacked all kinds of good things out of the Sudan that they used for the war and money and stuff like that. So he wanted to send me back in there to figure out how are we going to help a whole community that's been destroyed by 25 years of bombing and war and trauma. Every single person that you have, you see there's carrying post-traumatic stress. There's no infrastructure. There's no education. Most people by the age of 7, if they're male, have been out in the bush already carrying a gun, trying to live off the land and fighting for their lives. And then all of a sudden the war stops, though it seems to be restarting again. But the war stops and you come back and now these people are supposed to somehow become citizens again. They're supposed to get married. They're supposed to have families. They're supposed to raise kids. And what we're finding was they would come back and they would beat their wives to death. They would fight with each other. They'd be running around town getting drunk, using
Jim,
drugs.
I hate to interrupt, but I know we're going to blow through another break again, but you worked in the Sudan with these people, and you're talking about overcoming trauma. This is a whole society, a whole culture that's done that. And I think the big takeaway is what you're talking about actually works to restore even these that are those that were damaged to that degree.
Yeah, and just to take it back to the, you know, these are the children of the SS officers who are now making a difference in the world because something has happened in their character. They see the world a different way, and they're going to make a difference because they now see the world the way Jesus did it.
Right.
And that's what we got to take away.
All right, so we were talking about a sociopath. I got to do a break. Dang it. But we were talking about a sociopath a moment ago. When we come back, I want to ask about acting because I'm thinking maybe it goes the other way. If a sociopath can act like they actually care but really don't, an actor has got to, maybe they don't really care, but they got to act like they do. All right, quick break. We'll come back and continue with Dr. Jim Wilder. There's a couple events coming up at the end of June. If you like this stuff, you're going to love the conference. It's called the Heart and Soul Conference. You can get more information at joy2thrive.com. It's the number 2, joy2thrive.com. And a whole bunch of leaders and gifted communicators in the area of spiritual formation are going to be there, as well as brain science and all that stuff. And also there's an event the evening of June 28th. I'll be emceeing an event honoring Dr. Dallas Willard and his wife Jane, and more information on that as well at joy2thrive.com, joy2thrive.com. Quick break. We'll talk about acting and why are they so good at what they do. And what makes a bad actor, by the way, and how can you sort of just tell they're, quote, faking it? Man, can you tell I love this stuff? So it comes down to how to connect with other people, right? How do you connect with other souls? How do you connect with other brains? And I'm not talking about getting bloody at all. It's just how do you connect, you know? And did you know people obviously research and study this, obviously the field of psychology, but more specifically neuropsychology and the way the brain actually works and how it connects with other people and the cues you get from facial recognition and all this kind of stuff, right? So if a sociopath is someone who can fake like they are really interested and they're not, is it the same with an actor? What makes a really good actor or actress? And then we all know you can tell when they're faking it and they're a bad actor. Well, what is it about that? We continue with Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and neurotheologian, who is really all about the intersection of brain science and the Bible and biblical wisdom and spiritual formation and all this kind of stuff. So, Doc, what about acting? What's up with acting?
Well, we know that we got two sides to our brain. And the right side of our brain is mostly nonverbal, and it contains how we really feel. And because of the weird way your brain is wired, it shows up on the left side of your face. And what we think and what we intend is on the left side of our brain, which oddly enough shows up on the right side of our face.
Okay.
So here I am flying across the country, you know, and they're playing these lousy movies and other things on the planes, you know, the stuff you got to watch when
sure.
you're back there.
Right.
And some of the monitors are right in front of you. So I will take and put a like a book or a card over half of their face so that I'm just looking at their left or the right side of their face. And the bad actors are putting their expressions on the left side of their face. The left side of their brain is controlling the right side of their face. So
right.
as they're, the right side of their face has got all the expression, and the right side of their brain, which is going to the left side of the brain, face. Yeah. It's kind of dragging and just sort of sitting there.
Yeah. Are you telling me, because every acting class should know this, and I bet they do, that you could like cover one side of the face or the other mm-hmm. and determine who's actually, quote, selling it or not?
Yeah, because the people are really feeling it. It'll show up on on their feeling left side of their face, and then you know suddenly you're in tune with what they're doing and that sort of thing. So it's just really obvious when you're watching this on the different movies as you're flying along.
Dr. Wilder, we've got our lines have been melting since almost the moment we started, and we won't have time to get to Jane and Anne and Mandy and Dustin and Bob and Carol and all these people. But where would you suggest people go to get more information about this and how it may apply in their lives? Because it really is the life model. That's the book that you've written on this. And just encourage people to go to the website and sort of poke around.
Well, on Joy to Thrive, you'll find a link that goes to the life model website. And that's probably where you get most of the theory that you want to go to and look at and learn from. I noticed Dustin there said that in his little note that he had meningitis when he
yes.
was five, I think, something
yes.
like that. Yeah, I had meningitis when I was two. And so, if you saw the movie Awakenings, I am the patient in Awakenings. What condition they had is what I had as a child.
Wow.
And so these are fascinating things, you know, make you interested in the brain when you think about it afterwards. But, you know, there's a lot, again, to be built in terms of joy. And as you look through the website, you'll find things like the Thrive training that could be interesting. So we just encourage you to go there and get some of the information you want to have. And you know, final note, I'd like to encourage people to consider coming to the conference if you want to be working on these kinds of issues. The main thing that I'm thinking about is just having Dallas Willard there, you know. If you think about it, if you'd had a chance to be with C.S. Lewis when he was still here on Earth, and there's been a dinner with C.S. Lewis, and you could have been there, and you could tell your kids and everybody else, you know what, I met C.S. Lewis. I've had Billy Graham in my house. I've been up to his house for a hot dog roast. I have a book signed by his wife, you know. Mm. I had Dr. Sears, who's involved in this breastfeeding controversy. He was
yes.
over at my house, you know, and we talked about attachment and stuff like that. You look back at those things, and you go, wow, this is some very important people I've had a chance to meet in my life. I think for me, the highlight is going to be there for that dinner for Dallas and Jane Willard to honor them. And when I look back on my life as the people I've met, that's one person that I really think is going to change the way that mm. Christianity has been influential in this whole century.
Mm.
And I would just encourage everybody to be there. I mean, all of his friends are going to be there too, that the people that we're have teaching. Fantastic group, but you want to be there. Jack Hayford's going to be there, Pastor Jack, and a lot
well, and I get to MC. And so
I was about to say that at the top of the list.
But I'm so jazzed to be
not
there.
Not care about anything else.
Yeah, Frank's going to be there.
Pastore will be a chart.
All right, gang, that is coming up at the end of June. The event that Jim Wilder's talking about is a dinner honoring the ministry and life accomplishments of Dr. Dallas Willard and his wife, Jane. It's going to be at La Cañada Flint Ridge Country Club, put on June 28th. Get more information and tickets and all that at joy2thrive.com. That's also where I encourage you to go if you like this stuff, if you're new to this, if you want to learn more information, go just sort of snoop around. joy2thrive.com and just reflect for a moment all the stuff that we talked about. From Nazi doctors to sociopaths to acting to connecting to infants in their ninth month to character development and spiritual formation and oh my God, our great and marvelous, wondrous God who put this whole thing together like this.
And the dream we have to change the world by acting the way he wants us to be.
Amen.
In life.
Amen. Quick break. We're going to continue straight ahead. Oh, I didn't even tell you guys. Guess what? When we come back, Josh Lindblom from the Los Angeles Dodgers, number 52, joins us next. Hang right there. We'll continue straight ahead at 99.5 KKLA.